Welcome to the Loma Linda University Church Sermon Podcast. We hope you will be blessed by the message.
Good morning. This is indeed a special day. Celebrate both our healthcare workers and our moms. And I would suggest that the most ubiquitous, effective, and underpaid healthcare workers we have our Dr. Mom. Thank you for what you all done through the years for every one of us. We call this the Loma Linda University Church. So I think it's fair that I start with a quiz. Are you ready? I want to read you the names of some bright young men, college graduates, doing well, already moving into positions of leadership. Prominent, great potential. Let me read you their names. Shamua, Shaphat, Igal, Palti, Gadiel, Gadi, Amiel, Sether, Nabi, and Geuel. Who are those guys? Surely I've got some Bible scholars here. If I read two more names, you will all know them, Caleb and Joshua. The 12 spies that were chosen by Moses under the direction of God were told to spy out the land of Canaan, to go check it out. The Bible doesn't tell us a lot about that trip, but I rather imagine as they left on the side of the Jordan, Mom was giving instructions. I want a place by the river. I want a place with a good vineyard. I want a view. All the things they were dreaming about in the land of Canaan that they were going to inhabit. They traveled for 40 days and nights. There's not many jobs in the Bible I would have enjoyed, but I think I would have enjoyed being a spy. We don't know whether they traveled together, whether they went separately, whether they dressed, whether they camouflaged, the Bible doesn't tell us much. All we really know is they stole some grapes and pomegranates and figs, and then they came to the city of Anak. And it was fortified. And what did they say? The men are huge, and we look like grasshoppers beside them. And they slipped into what I would call the grasshopper complex, that this is too big, we can't do it. When they got back to the children of Israel again, Moses had them gather, assembled to hear the majority report. And they talked about, showed the grapes, showed what they had, wonderful land, but. And then Caleb and Joshua stood up and said, no. Remember, what God has promised us is ours already. The Bible tells us that the children of Israel spent all night weeping. By morning, they turned against those 10 young men, and by that day, they were dead. And the children of Israel turned back into the wilderness for another 40 years. What is it about God? He calls out a few. The Bible is full of those stories. Gideon, Samson, Daniel, goes on and on. God's not interested in numbers. He calls out a few to accomplish his purposes. And I'd like to suggest today that this church was called out to share a special health message with the world. It really started 160 years ago in the middle of the Civil War in this country. Life expectancy at birth was 40 years in America at that time. 40 years you'd expect to live on the average. During the Civil War, it was even less. Diets were atrocious. Prohibition had failed several decades earlier. America was not healthy. Medical science was basically non-existent. Doctors were trying all sorts of potions and this and that and the other thing. We've got a collection of some of the gizmos they cried to make people better. And is it in that context that Ellen White distilled some concepts that were emerging, said there is a better way, and coined what we call the 8 simple remedies. Simple things. Things that, frankly, she said we need to practice personally, but she went a step further than that and made them a part of the Adventist Church theology, part of our doctrine. This is the way we need to live as a people. Our colleagues at Weimar Institute some years ago put them together into an acronym that's easy to remember, New START. Nutrition, plant-based nutrition, exercise, plenty of water, sunlight, being outdoors, temperance, avoiding behavioral harmful substances, fresh air, rest, and trust in divine power. If you look at what this world is talking about today in healthcare, it's 8 simple remedies. We've had them for 160 years, being taught in many places now as the answer to what we're facing. With that knowledge, the church decided to start training others, to treat others, and identified a promising young man by the name of John Harvey Kellogg, charismatic character, said, John, take it away. And so John Harvey Kellogg began our first lifestyle center in a retired judge's home that he rented in Michigan. Western Health Reform Institute, they called it. It quickly got full, became very popular, so Kellogg moved on to build an even larger facility in Battle Creek, Michigan. He borrowed the name from sanatorium, which is a place for wounded soldiers to live, and modified it to be sanitarium, and created Battle Creek Sanitarium. Grew in popularity, presidents, CEOs, many famous people came to get 8 simple remedies and the other things that Kellogg was offering at Battle Creek Sanitarium. By 1895, he had so much momentum, he started a medical school, the Adventist Church's first medical school, American Medical Missionary College, he called it. Had some notable graduates from that school. Alfred Shryock, one of our buildings on campus where the School of Pharmacy is now located, Shryock Hall. Harry Miller went on to become the China doctor of considerable fame, a graduate, 1902, from the American Medical Missionary College. That building burned down in 1902, but Kellogg was not to be deterred and built a larger, bigger building. He was on a roll. But his fame and his ego was gradually carrying him away from the church. By 1910, the medical school closed. And when the Depression hit in the 1920s, Battle Creek Sanitarium went bankrupt. Finally, it was sold to the U.S. government. If you go to Battle Creek today, you'll see a large, impressive government office building named after 3 senators who were there as patients in the war, Dole, Hart, and Inouye. And there's a little plaque out in the front yard. This is Battle Creek Sanitarium, John Harvey Kellogg. But Ellen White didn't give up with that, and so she's cast her sights on Southern California and appointed a young businessman, pastor by the name of John Burden, find us a place. We're going to try again. Burden had already identified Paradise Valley Hospital and Glendale Hospital, start them. The church was broke. There was resistance to doing anything more, but Ellen White persisted. And so John Burden finally came up with a spot that had been called Mound City, a twice bankrupt resort hotel that had been recently renamed Loma Linda to be more attractive to potential buyers. And they started a hospital in that resort hotel. They borrowed Kellogg's name, Sanitarium, and it became Loma Linda Sanitarium. If you go over to our library, you can see the plaque that was above the door, Loma Linda Sanitarium. But they also want to do training, so they started a college. They call it the College of... No. They call it the College of Evangelists first, and started with two schools, school of nursing and a school of cooks and bakers. It was only a year later, in 1906, that they had the dream of maybe we can start a medical school. And so they started putting plans together, and in 1909, the medical school started. The very year that the federal government released the Flexner Report, setting standards for medical schools, that shut down half the medical schools in this country. Loma Linda began with a very meager beginning right at that time. The first graduates came out of the nursing school in 1907, out of the medical school in 1914. An incredible history began of Loma Linda graduates spreading literally around the world. A remarkable statistic is that between 1900 and 1950, the Adventist Church started 100 new hospitals, an average of 2 hospitals a year for 50 years, literally all over the world. An incredible sort of process. There's another part of the Loma Linda story that actually began in South London toward the end of the Second World War. A young Anglican minister by the name of J.B. Phillips was trying to keep his young congregants together and encouraged during a difficult time. He had a bombed-out church and all the struggles they were facing. And decided the most effective thing he could do would be to translate the New Testament into modern English so they would be easier for them to understand. So he labored night after night, painfully translating the New Testament, occasionally checking his translation with a colleague of his, C.S. Lewis, and finally completed the translation of the New Testament. But in that process, a concept came to his mind out of those study and understanding, the concept of wholeness, that being complete, being physically, mentally, spiritually, socially together is a biblical concept, the concept of wholeness. So after the war ended, he wrote a little book. I have a copy of that now. Making Men Whole. The concept of wholeness. Inspiring book. About that same time, an ocean and a continent away in a little place called Loma Linda, a faculty committee was studying to come up with a new motto for the 50th anniversary of Loma Linda. Now, I don't have minutes from that committee, I will admit that. But I got to believe they saw that book, Making Men Whole, and out of that came the choice of the motto for Loma Linda, to make man whole. That's been our motto to today. So wholeness has become an integral part of who we are, what we teach. Several decades later, another faculty member joined us here by the name of Dr. Will Alexander. Many of you remember Will, passed away a few years ago. Will tried to take the concept of wholeness and build it into how we practice, what we teach, what we do at Loma Linda. And out of his teachings and rounds that he went on, came up the term whole person care as how we teach wholeness at Loma Linda. It's interesting that just last year, the California State of California came out with a directive to all the physicians in California. Please practice whole person care. A term that came from this institution years ago. Another decade or so went by, and Dr. Lynn Behrens, president at that time, says, we need some core values. We need some way to distinguish who we are, what we stand for, what we believe in, something that can guide the educational efforts, the clinical activities that we have here. And so a committee spent several years working on those, as we do in academic committees, and finally came up with 7 core values. They've morphed a bit since then, but those 7 core values are a key part of who we are and what we teach. I remember them with the acronym, See with Jesus' Eyes. The C, letter C, stands for compassion. the letter with, W-I-T-H, wholeness, integrity, teamwork, and humility. J and Jesus for justice, and E and I's for excellence. C with Jesus' eyes. Compassion, we get that. Compassion is not just sympathy. Compassion is getting engaged, doing something, engaging. Best exemplified by the Good Samaritan sculpture right out here on our front lawn. Or the Come Unto Me sculpture up by the entrance to the new hospital. Wholeness, that's become core of who we are, the center part of this. Integrity, absolutely. The ability to be honest with ourselves, with each others, with patients, a guiding principle in healthcare. Teamwork, for those of you in the healthcare business know that none of us can do this alone. So there's a incredible effort now on teamwork, training together, learning to function together. Humility. That's a tough one. How many years have I gone to school and you want me to still be humble? And yet so critical to the process of providing compassionate care. Grace Lichtenstein said this well, which he says, work for a cause, not for applause. Live to inspire, not to impress. Don't try to make your presence noticed, make your absence felt. That's humility. And I would like to argue that's an absolutely key part of providing compassionate care. J in Jesus is for justice. That's a tough one for us in the healthcare business. Do you provide the same care to the drunk driver that just killed a young family on the freeway as you do to the businessman with a heart attack? Those are tough calls. Calls that we have to make all the time. And it's in that context that we must remember that every child, every person is a child of God. And finally, excellence. Excellence is something that we all must aspire to. So those values, that combination of 8 simple remedies and now comprehensive care has become the hallmark of Adventist healthcare literally around the world. I like to think of Adventist health in 3 components. The first one, I would argue, are the Adventist health professionals. We've got 55,000 have graduated from Loma Linda. We think roughly 2/3 are still living. But there's thousands of graduates from other institutions around the world. We have 7 medical schools now, 75 schools of nursing, 5 dental schools, literally sharing the Adventist message wherever they go. So Adventist professionals are the key part, wherever they work, wherever they are. I was speaking with an alumnus just last weekend down in San Diego. She was telling me that she was passing through Knoxville, Tennessee, when her husband had a heart attack. Went to a public hospital, serious, were concerned what was going to happen, only to find there was a Loma Linda doctor caring for them, praying for them in that public hospital. So we work many places, but it's powerful. In our hospitals, we now have about 225 hospitals and about 500 clinics worldwide, 25 in Africa, 15 in Latin America, 11 in India, 11 in the Philippines. Scattered all over. A considerable army of people serving God. And finally, I would argue that the key part of the Adventist health message are each one of you, church members. You think of what this church does through its messages, through its programs. It used to be the 5-day plan to stop smoking. Now it's nutrition, cooking classes, stress classes, so many different things. We talk also now about SDOH, social determinants of health, all the things besides healthcare that impact our health, transportation, safety, housing, security, places to exercise, and so on. The Adventist Church does all those. We used to call them darker societies, community service centers, and all the different things that we do. Ellen White would have been the first to say that every church member is a health worker. We talk about comprehensive health ministry. That's what we all do. And out of that context has come an incredible army of people worldwide that espouse Adventist health. What are we confronting? What are we to do now with that message? We're in a fractured world, as you all know. Just watch the news feeds. It's chaotic. Wars. Probably even more importantly, all the personal animus, anxiety, stress, teenage suicide, all the things that are happening in our world today, crying out for compassionate care. And if you think what we've got a combination of highly skilled, qualified clinicians doing the best medical care possible together with 8 simple remedies that are still a core part of who we are. And it's in that context I would like to argue that our God is asking us to do what Christ did himself, reach out to the marginalized. Christ specialized in the marginalized. You don't hear him talking very often about preaching in the synagogue or in a church someplace, but he was reaching out to the blind, the lame, the thrown away by society people. He said, those are mine. I want them. Our oldest daughter sent me a cartoon a while back. I'd like to show you that I think summarizes this, if it come up on the screen. Jesus talking to a group of people, could be the Pharisees, could be us. The difference between you and me is you use scripture to determine what love means, and I use love to determine what the scripture means. Pretty powerful. Pretty powerful. I want to share one more story. This happened in a small town. Young family were raising their children, 2 girls and a boy. As most parents, proud of their kids, watch them grow, go to school, develop. As they grew, it became clear that the younger daughter was going to be one of those uniquely beautiful young women that turns heads wherever she goes. I have 3 daughters. I know a father's feelings. But they watched them move into their teen years. Proud of them, went to church every Sabbath, did what they were supposed to do. And then one day, the unthinkable thing happened. Their daughter, their beautiful young daughter, was caught in adultery. What do you do when that happens? What do you do as a parent? What do you do as a church? It was quiet that night in the home. No one knew what to say, where to start. Mom and Dad didn't sleep much that night, trying to figure out what is the next step. Finally, the next day, they had to talk some. But poor daughter was so, so sorry. I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. I'm so sorry. They tried to put their lives back together again, but people were staring, watching. You could hear the whispers. They went about town. And then one day it happened again. And again. And pretty soon their daughter, their beautiful young daughter, became the village prostitute. What do you do as a parent? Do you hold them close? Discipline? Push them away? What do you do as a church board? By now the church had disfellowshipped her, She had given up on church. They had no use for her, and she really didn't care about them anymore. She gradually moved to the edge of society. The family finally decided it's probably best for her to move away, go to a different town, try to start her life again. So she packed up her belongings and headed down the road. Found a job, settled in, was determined to straighten out her life and to move forward. But a few months later, some visitors came through from her old town. The old temptations returned, and she slipped back into life of prostitution. She had totally given up on the church by now. Irrelevant to her life. She was just struggling with her own issues. One day she heard there was a visiting preacher going through. She didn't really care about it anymore, but decided out of curiosity to just go down and listen to this guy. So went down to the center of town and lingered on the edge of the crowd. And it was there in this town of Magdala that Mary first met Jesus. And you know the story. Some of the men in the crowd had been the ones that had led her into temptation. I'm sure if I'd been Christ, I would have pointed them out right on the spot. What hypocrites. And yet Jesus bent over and started writing in the sand the sins of each one until they all gradually moved away. It'd be wonderful if the story ended right there, but it doesn't. The Bible tells us that Christ cast seven demons out of Mary. What was going on? Something was still troubling in her life. Then we next see Mary back at her hometown of Bethany, where Simon, a church elder, probably the head elder, was throwing a party. A party to recognize the resurrection of Lazarus, Mary's brother. Bible scholars suggest to us that it was probably Simon, they think was Mary's uncle, and probably the man that led her into adultery in the first place. So you can be sure that she didn't get an invitation to the party. But she came anyway. Came in through the back door. So her eyes adjusted to the light, moved across the room to where Jesus was, and started anointing his feet with perfume. As the fragrance filled the room, Simon looked over, saw what was happening. Come on. This guy has no idea who this woman is that's wiping his feet. Once again, I would have been very tempted to point out, Simon, you hypocrite. And yet Jesus gently said, Simon, if one man owes 50 denarii and another owes 500, both are forgiven. Who will love the most? And Simon understood. We next see Jesus at the foot of the cross, ministering as Christ was crucified. And then finally, on Sunday morning, one of the first to get to the grave site saw the stone rolled back. The others went back, but Mary lingered. Turned to the gardener standing there, Sir, where have they taken him? And he said, Mary. And she recognized him. And then a most incredible thing happened. Jesus chose Mary, the village prostitute, the demon-possessed woman, to be the first to announce to the world the most greatest event of all mankind, his resurrection. That's the kind of God we serve, who God who reaches out, says, I want you. I want you. You may be cast away by others, but I want you as my son and daughter. That's the challenge we face as a church. We face as healthcare professionals. We face as a healthcare system with an incredible message to share with the world. My prayer is that each one of us because part of that movement.
Find more podcasts, videos, church events, and how you can support the Loma Linda University Church at lluc.org.